Hey.
Hey.
Saw you on the news. Still pulling people out of burning wreckage, huh?
Old habits.
You look terrible.
Thanks.
Why'd you call me, Justin?
I was hoping that you'd heard that maybe you'd go to the funeral.
Why would I go to the funeral?
I've been flying a lot.
What?
Yeah, that golden pass they gave us, I've been using it. Every Friday night, I fly from L.A. to Tokyo or Singapore, Sydney. Then I get off, and I have a drink, and then I fly home.
Why?
Because I want it to crash, Chris. I don't care about anybody else on board. Every little bump we hit or turbulence, I mean, I actually close my eyes and pray that I can get back.
This is not going to change.
No, I'm sick of lying. We made a mistake.
I have to go. He's going to be wondering where I am.
We were not supposed to leave.
Yes, we were. Goodbye, Justin.
We have to go back, Chris. We have to go back!
Hey, yo, it's me, the smoke monster.
Oh, no, it's no, not! We no, can't no. go back! We have to stay here!
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of the month.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best game of the month.
My name is Christopher Thomas Plant, and I know the best game this month.
My name is Ross Froschick, and I know the best game of the month.
Do you?
Welcome back to The Besties, where four of Earth's best friends talk about the latest and greatest in tech news,
tech
sports. Tech news, sports news, news sports.
Wolf
which
Blitzer.
Is basically just who can type fastest. Wolf Blitzer, and so much more in games. And this week, we're going to talk about video games. You know, we thought that Besties formula, we've been doing it the same way for so long.
That was like at least 3 weeks.
At least 3 weeks. We had to mix it up.
Yeah. I mean, should we really talk about, like, here's the thing. I think we should just lay all of our fucking cards, take them out of the decorative box we keep our cards in, put them on the
table
for
everyone to see. Are we keeping
the
rule card?
No, throw that card out. The rest of the cards, everyone can see. We were going to cancel Besties. We were ready
to
take Besties out behind the barn. This is not a goof. We did not think the ROI on this particular radio program was beneficial in any way for anyone. But no kidding, like... I don't know. It's been kind of wonderful. The outpouring, the demand for more Besties.
This is how, what's his name felt when they made that movie about the sci-fi show that got canceled and then they made a movie about it. That guy probably felt pretty good too.
John Travolta.
That guy.
MASH. Thank you everyone for demanding the Besties return to you. Please keep in mind that this show is only here because... you love it so much, so if you want it to keep coming, you have to keep telling other people to listen to it.
Or just tell us how much you like it, because, like, we need
that. No, I don't care about that. I want them to spread the word.
Okay.
High and low.
What can they do? Like, reviews on iTunes, maybe rate us?
Reviews on iTunes would be great. Rate us there. Tweet about the show with the Besties hashtag that I just invented.
Let's talk about some of the fundamental changes, because I think the biggest thing for us to bring it back... is, like, I think we've all pretty much agreed at this point between the four of us that our favorite part of the show is the year-end specials that we do in New York. We've done a couple of them where we at that point have all played all the games. We can do these deep dives. It's not like, I don't like just getting into shitty arguments about, like,
games we haven't played.
Games that one of us played, and, like, that also sort of lends itself to just one of us talking for 15 minutes and, like, it sucks.
Yeah.
And it's not... like, that stuff sort of weighed the show down. But at the same time, I think sort of the general structure of the show is decent. So we wanted to make it more like that and less like the weekly episodes, a lot of which I think were pretty weak. So
yeah. Well, weak. That's good.
Yeah. Thank
more
you,
Ross. Like, I think there's a lot of people that would want a podcast that's more like the Lincoln Douglas debates. So imagine that, but toss two more guys in there because just Lincoln and Douglas were not cutting it.
Everybody was bored during that, historically speaking.
Here's the trade-off. We're going to do it monthly from now on. And I know that's going to be a bummer for a lot of people because I consume my podcast weekly and I like having like this constant thing. This show just, it really isn't built for that because to get us all together and make and edit the show, it takes a little bit of time, but in order for all of us to have played all four games enough to know what we're talking about and then do that every week, it's just not, like, we can't do it, guys. Like, it is not sustainable at all.
And so, we'd rather be talking about, like, super, super memorable games and not just games that literally just came out 2 days ago and we're like, yeah, this is pretty good.
We would also rather, and really, if you're honest with yourself, we were still only doing one good episode a month, maybe. So this is hopefully going to be a
cream of the crop
product. Yeah. Also, we're going to make it longer than the episodes usually were to try and make up for some of that and incorporate sort of some...
Ugh, I didn't know about that. Let me clear that with me.
No, there are also so many ways to see us now on the site or hear us if that's what you want. I mean, I don't know if you've watched or listened to Griffin's new show, Overview. But it's pretty great.
Thanks, yep. Chris. Chris does some stuff too. But we are,
we can save plugs to the end.
I just think this is going to be a much better formula. I seriously, guys, like, I love doing podcasts. I love listening to podcasts. I really do wish that this could be a weekly thing, but I really don't think it makes sense, right? Like,
that's true. Comic books are monthly too. Just deal with it. This is the world you're living in.
And there's no saying like we can't do another podcast later on that is weekly, a little bit easier to produce. But like to do the kinds of discussions that we like doing, and like the kinds of discussions that we do in those year-end videos, I think this is the way to do it. So hopefully you understand. Right. If not,
tough.
It's free, I guess. It's free. Like you didn't waste any money on it.
You can probably still complain if you want to, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
Still America after all.
That's exciting, though. So we're monthly. We should mention this is going to be the quote-unquote January 2014 episode. We're coming in a little late because we were still in the process of maybe not killing the show. So we figured out that the show is existing, and now we're doing January. We're going to do the February episode at the end of February, which seems like a good time to do it.
We should also tell you at the top that we're going to start doing like reader or listener questions and suggestions for games to talk about. You can hit us up at besties@polygon.com and we'll get all those.
Yep.
And also let us know if you have any feedback on the show because that's, you know, important.
You can email us now, besties@polygon.com.
Yeah, just said that out loud.
Okay, well, I'm just saying it too, just to mix it up.
That sounds great. I'm very pleased. I'm excited about the new format, and I feel like we should just get it going, right?
Let's dive into it with a game that definitely didn't come out in January.
Starting out strong.
This is going to be a good one to talk about, because it's a game that you can talk about for a very long time, because there's a lot of fascinating stuff going on in that game. They very recently, I think last night, pushed an update for this game that sort of turns it a bit on its ear, and that game is Rust.
I did not know about this update. Well, okay, let's give the overview first, and then we'll talk about Rust itself.
Well, let's not get our brands mixed. Let's not cross the cables on our brandings.
Okay.
It's not an overview. We can call it something else. We can call it a glance. At a glance.
At a glance. Give me the glance of Rust, Griffin.
Do you want me to do it? I feel like I've been talking a lot. I'm just so nervous.
Okay. Rust is sort of like Minecraft. In that you're thrust into a world and forced to carve out your own existence. Imagine if Minecraft had like good graphics because it was made by people who actually care.
Well, wait.
And let me finish.
I realize
made
you
by,
hate
good graphics that by people who actually care. And also there was a point because there are other people trying to kill you with guns and also zombies. Now imagine. Well,
oh wait,
Minecraft
hold up.
Zombies.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, you spoke
Let
too
me
soon
put
there,
some
buddy boy.
Up in it. They took zombies out. Yes.
No zombies. What? They're gone. Yeah.
Patched them out. It was something they always wanted to do, was to remove the zombies. Because you made the Minecraft comparison a lot, and that's fair. But I think most people compared it to DayZ.
Yeah.
Because it does have that survival element that is very, very... I mean, it is the game. The game is all about survival. So it was a survival zombie game, so very DayZ-y. It didn't help that they both sort of entered this early access stage of alpha around the same time, which was last November. But I thought we could talk about it now just because they're updating it so frequently. And
yeah, it's like a playable game now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's playable.
Here's what I don't get. Wait, yeah. They always intended to remove the zombies?
They always did, yeah.
Why the hell put zombies in there in the first place?
That's a good question.
No one legally made them do it, right?
No, I forget the guy's name who made
Gary.
It. Gary
Newman.
He is the creator of Gary's Mod.
And he wrote that Cars song in the 80s.
God, that was a really good joke.
Thanks.
He talked about how it sort of started off based on that DayZ idea, but he wanted to make it... And honestly, if you play both games, they're not really similar at all. They're really not. Rust has a level of accessibility that just doesn't make it even nearly resemble DayZ.
Wait, which is more accessible?
Rust.
Really?
Oh my god, yeah, dude.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, that just shows like how inaccessible DayZ is. Then.
Rust,
I watched your video and it's like, wow, that game looks amazing, but I don't know if I have the time to really get into figuring all that out. And then I would like... look at DayZ and it just seems impossible.
It's not impossible. It's just not the... So the crafting element of Rust is what completely sets it apart. Because in Rust, you have to survive a lot of different lethal forces. You can starve to death. You can be irradiated, which will kill you if you are in like radiation zones. There are a lot of different status effects that will hurt you. Like you can be cold if you're naked. Well, a wolf isn't really a status effect.
I mean, it is if you get bit by a wolf, you're still being bit. You got to take care of that.
Yeah. There are a lot of ways to die. I think obviously the most prevalent one is other players who will just kill you for no reason. But you have some agency to prevent that. It's not. I mean, the different resources that you need to craft things are. Somewhat randomized. There are areas in the map where you can like find really good troves of wood and stone that you need.
Yeah, but I thought the maps were uniform, weren't they?
The maps are uniform, yeah, but I'm talking about actually the resource spread across those maps.
Word.
In DayZ, you just like start off on a beach and hope that you run into a house that has some good stuff in it. And there's definitely a random loot element in Rust as well. There's little... care packages hidden all over the map in radiated zones.
Yeah.
But for the most part, like, you don't really need that stuff. You can chop a tree and then hit a rock and get enough stuff to make a hatchet, and then, like, you sort of know which way to go. DayZ, you kind of just, it's a game of chance.
It's funny, though, because when I first started playing Rust, I was so lost. Like, had no idea what I was supposed to do, because who the hell thinks... oh, I need to craft stuff, so I'm going to take this rock that they spawned me with and hit a tree with it, and then I'll get wood. Like, it really, when you first start out, because it's so bare bones and, like, so raw in terms of game design right now, you really are not given very much direction at all. Once you, like, realize, oh, I hit C or whatever brings up the crafting menu, the game starts making a lot more sense.
Yeah.
But... This is not very user-friendly right now.
I think the biggest testament to that is that I don't actually think the game is all that bare bones right now. It just doesn't do a great job of explaining what it is. Like, the end game for Rust is something you can get to within a couple hours. And all it involves is going out, gathering resources, and then using the game's fairly robust fort-building mechanics to create something that other players... will be unable to take down. So you can, it has an entire like sub menu of things that you can build that basically snap together Lego block style to make these huge and elaborate forts. And then you can, you know, build storage boxes in those forts and then go out into the map, collect stuff, and then put it in your fort. And then you can make sleeping bags or beds so you can spawn inside your fort. And then like, you basically don't have to start over every time you die, because when you die, you lose everything. So, like, the end game idea is that you can go out, try and design a fort that is really difficult to siege, and or, you know, going out and sieging other people's forts. Like, there actually is quite a bit of complexity and back and forth to it, but, like, if you don't look at a video or you don't have a friend helping you start out, there is no way that you're going to reach that point on your own.
Which, to a certain extent, like, that was Minecraft when it first started. Like, you did not get a lot of direction when you were first starting out, and you're just like, oh, I'm hitting some sand with some blocks of sand.
You were going to forums, and, you know, it was actually... And I think that it's interesting to watch games. It's a very... For some reason, when you start a game out like that, and you force people to learn the basics like that, it's not as silly of a strategy as it seems like, because I think you get two effects. One is there's a lot more that you actually learn on your own, and I think knowledge that you gain that way is a lot stickier and a lot more rewarding. You get that hit of dopamine when you can figure out a lot of stuff, and there's a lot of stuff to figure out. But I think it also helps you to develop a sense of community pretty early, because if you look at, like, EverQuest is sort of my classic example of this, where a lot of the game was not presented to you, and you had to head online to forums and websites to try to figure out how things were done and how items were created. And I think that forces interaction between players and starts to develop a sense of community for the game that maybe you lose with something that held your hand a little bit more.
I really enjoy not having everything spoon-fed to me, but I am a little afraid that people are going to catch on to this idea that the best marketing strategy is to just not explain your game very well. And Dark Souls is another example of this, where there's a lot that's great about that game, and it's very well designed, but there are a number of things I don't know how it would be possible to have ever guessed that I should do something without having turned to somebody who had already finished the game or a FAQ. And, like, I think that is part of why that game has, you know, developed this kind of cult community, is because everyone has to turn towards each other to get help to kind of get through it and figure it out.
Yeah, but
and
you need a good game first. You can't just, like, throw a game up with no, like...
Absolutely.
You're going to have a tough time getting attention.
I agree for sure. But I think part of why Rust, like Justin said, has become so popular so quickly is because you needed other people playing it. You kind of had to push it on to other people just to kind of get off the ground.
Yeah, which makes me think of something else. So Griffin was talking about sieging houses, and one of the things about Rust is that it's never off. So if you sign out, you, like, your body still, correct me if I'm wrong, still exists in the world.
There is a pretty wide set of server mods that people have developed to sort of spin the game in different ways. And to the developer's credit, they have started incorporating some of the more helpful aspects that those mods added. For instance, one of the more popular mods has a feature in it called door sharing. So if Justin and I build a base together, whoever puts the door on that base is basically the only person that can get into it. But this mod would add a way to manually add people to that door so that they can open it. And the developer has now incorporated it, so it's part of the base game.
There's for doors, too, right?
Yeah. And one of the mods is a no sleepers mod, which basically when you log out, you disappear.
Oh, okay.
Otherwise, the default is your body just lays down and then someone can kill you and still take all your stuff.
With the logic being you would lay down in your house, but even with that mod on, you still have to worry about, I'd spent tons of time making this awesome house. Someone could come by with C4 and blow it to smithereens. Right.
Absolutely.
To me, like, I've actually had more fun. My favorite part of Rust is the beginning. It's not the end game stuff. It is this idea. It is this panicked, completely vulnerable state of just trying to get a foothold in the world. Because that process basically involves you. Yes, you start out with a rock, and then there is a sort of hierarchy. There's like a natural progression of tools that you know you want to make. And to me, trying to run up that hierarchy and stay alive through it, and then, like, getting just enough stuff to, you know, bank it to make a wood shelter with a furnace inside so you can smelt metal to make a metal door. And then once you do that, you are good to go basically for life. that is such an exciting and rewarding part of the game. It's also like makes you feel like a pioneer because you can basically lay down your roots wherever you want, and there are good aspects about each part of the environment. There are bad aspects about each part of the environment. Like, it really does make you feel you can take a tremendous amount of ownership over a shared multiplayer world.
Yeah, but isn't it a bummer that, like, again, let's say you spent 6 hours and you have this dope house and you log out, someone with enough perseverance and like interest in saying, I'm gonna blow through all my resources just to ruin this guy's house, can do that. There's like nothing you can do to stop
them. They can, but I mean, if you think about the economy of the game, you brought up C4 a couple of times. To make C4, you need a flare, which you need to find in the environment, or you can learn to craft it and make it. You need leather, which drops off bears, or you can cook cloth. You need explosives, which are incredibly expensive to make per unit. You have to get a bunch of gunpowder and sulfur together. So C4 is essentially the most expensive thing you can make in the game. So if you were on across a little wooden shelter with a metal door on it and then spend C4 to get like the 10 rocks that the person has accumulated inside, it's a really bad investment. And that's another thing that sort of plays into the complexity of fort building, is that if you can make like a giant fort with a bunch of different chambers, it's really difficult for somebody to siege that without blowing through like 20 pieces of C4.
Sure.
Because then they just like, that is a mountain of resources they just spent, and there's no guarantee that they're going to get something out of it.
Yeah.
So it's not like, it's not a griefer's paradise in that sense. There are ways of protecting yourself, and developing those protections is really satisfying.
It's funny that you'd mention griefer's paradise, because you mentioned killing someone in cold blood on your videos.
I did do that, yeah.
Why did you do that?
I mean, you kind of become the beast. You kind of become the primal
beast.
It's like
piggy.
That which you hate. You become that which you hate. Here's the thing, like, that person I killed was, for all intents and purposes, naked. They had nothing.
Wait, how does that justify murder?
Well, it's not like
actually,
I killed...
the opposite does.
It's not like I killed them and then they dropped their, like... super rare rifle that they managed to
they might have
somewhere.
wait they're people, like they're not drops.
Chris, they're video game characters. What are you doing?
You know, I did watch Griffin murder this poor guy, but uh-huh. I would also say it's interesting because you get these scenarios. One of the coolest aspects, I think this is in DayZ too, but one of the coolest parts is like the voice chat via proximity, and you could hear other people talking if you're close to them. And my favorite moment of Griffin playing was when he walked into this dude's house and the dude had a fancy, what was it, a shirt?
It's not fancy, it was a shirt.
It was a shirt. And Griffin was like, hey, can I have your shirt? And the guy was like, sure. Like, very dejected about it.
Well, I was holding an axe.
He loved that shirt.
Yeah.
I was holding an axe and I had a hat on.
Sure.
That's the other thing, like... whenever you're out in the open and you've been collecting, you know, resources or drops from towns, and you run into somebody, you kind of have to eyeball them.
Yeah.
It's sort of that, to bring up EverQuest again, EverQuest had that system where you could right-click on an enemy, and it would give you, like, a sentence description of how they match up against you. Like, it'd be like, oh, he's pretty weak, you could walk all over him, or he looks pretty threatening, I'd watch out. You sort of have to eyeball it. So, like, if a person is dressed up all in blue clothing, then you know that they're wearing all Kevlar gear, which is like the best gear that you can get. And you know that you should probably run away from that person. If they're totally naked, you could probably like wreck shop, which has its own implications. If like you do want to kill somebody, you can take all your clothes off, run up to them and be like, hey man, can I have some wood? And they'll be like, yeah, sure, here, I just chopped this down. And you say, hey, thanks. And then you pull out the secret shotgun you were hiding.
Yep.
And they did not see that coming.
Yeah, and I think that's the real reason why they got rid of zombies, is because they realized it was way more interesting just to have these player interactions than it was fucking zombies.
Right.
Like,
I think it's a good move. I think zombies were essentially big treasure chests that could kill you. Like, the zombies had really good loot on them that you really couldn't get anywhere else. And so people would sort of build these farms where they could camp out really close to these zombie-infested areas, run out, kill a bunch, bank stuff, go back and kill. Like, it just really wasn't a very rewarding loop. Also, they were super, super, super buggy.
Also, fucking zombies are the worst. Enough already, guys. I'm done. I don't want to see anymore. I'm done.
You're like, up for it.
We get it.
Bears zombies. Are fine. Wolves
bears
are fine.
Great. Yeah.
Bears are going to be the next big thing, I think.
You think?
I think bears have...
You think Left 4 Dead 3 is just going to be all bears?
I would play that game.
I would definitely play that game.
Bear down.
So that's Rust. I definitely recommend it. It's still super early. There's some weird stuff about, like, when you kill an animal, the only meat in the game is chicken meat. So you
this is
kill
one of my favorite things about the
I mean,
game.
Everything tastes like chicken, so it makes sense.
I guess that's true. Like, you kill a wolf and then harvest it, and then you get chicken meat out of it.
Yeah, I would say, though, what are they charging for it? What is it, $20? I don't remember what the price is.
I want to say 30. Let me check.
Maybe 30. I played it on Mac. It supports Mac as well. It's pretty buggy.
It does not support Mac.
I mean, it quote-unquote supports Mac.
I don't know. I checked it out when I got my new MacBook Pro, which I think was like a month ago, and it was not... it's $20.
Okay.
$20. It just didn't work very well. It was really hard to get servers to load. PC version works pretty well, but I would hold off just until they can get...
Yeah, unless you're like one of those intrepid PC gamers that like is willing to try a really rough product. Like, if you're expecting something some semi-polished, wait 6 months. Mm-hmm. Like, it is definitely not there right now.
It's kind of fun, though, to watch a game like that evolve. Like,
yeah,
they have a strong core. Like, they have an idea for this, what they want it to be.
And it is fun. Like, I put a ton of time into this game now, which is frustrating because servers keep disappearing because they're updating it so quickly, which is another thing that you should keep in mind. But I put a ton of time into this game now, and now, like, this huge element is just fucking gone. Like, it's crazy that it's like... If you've been playing Mario all your life and then they patch in, like, in the original Super Mario Brothers, like, hey, we took Koopas out late. Like, that's like, crazy that they are able to do some of that. And it's kind of exciting because it kind of makes me want to jump back into the game and see what's up.
Yeah, I think this is the perfect example of, like, how early access should be used. We've been seeing, like, larger game publishers using early access to be like, well, we haven't gone through beta yet, so we're just going to use you guys as bug testers. That's crappy. Whereas here, you're literally seeing the game forming from the ooze of humanity into something that's actually playable. So it's very cool. It's just super buggy. But yeah.
Please, if you start a server, will you please let me know? And please just don't delete it as soon as I... finish researching every item in the game, please. Christ.
For once.
Do your research, they don't carry over from server to server, right?
No, there's no progressive character that you that you have. It's just server to server. So, yeah. Like, no kidding, probably 20 hours Jake and I spent, like, collecting resources, building this insane fort that nobody even... Somebody tried to siege it once, and it was basically a 3x3... house that was 3 stories tall, and then we made every sort of chunk of the house into its own discrete room. So it was like 30 rooms, each with their own like metal door that nobody could open unless they blew it open. Like, somebody tried once, they made it through 2 doors and was like, fuck this, I'm out. Like, we had this incredible thing going, and then the person that was hosting the server just deleted it. All gone.
That's life, though, isn't it? I mean, in a nutshell.
Yeah, I mean, you could die at any time. Thanks, Justin, for that reminder.
I want to talk about another game that I'm equally sort of obsessed with, both conceptually and in practice, and that's Hearthstone, the new collectible card game from Blizzard.
Just got put
out on beta.
It launched an open beta in January, so this one
I think
is a little
while,
bit
so
more.
There's a lot of stuff we haven't had an opportunity to talk about.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that sounds good. Hearthstone is... I have never been one for collectible card games. I've never really... I think it's largely because I never had people to play with.
Oh.
You and I got into a bit deep with... into Magic the Gathering, I feel like, in college.
Sure.
No.
Wow.
Maybe Yikes. You did, but I didn't.
He was just humoring you?
We went to college like 7 years apart. Do you know what we did play, Griffin? We played that...
A Tactics. Remember...
We played a Tactics. We played, but remember there was that Marvel
HeroClix
collectible. No, it was like a card game where you would have like a team.
Oh yeah, that was shitty.
I liked it.
Okay.
Anyway,
how the tactics are dope. Can we take a quick like aside to talk about how dope a tactic? Have you guys heard of this?
No.
We'll get back into the discussion, but it was like the coolest idea ever. It was little figures that were sort of like hero clicks. Do you know what those are?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like little miniature figures with stats on them. Except each of them had a sort of way of physically attacking. So it was Star Wars themed.
Oh.
This version. So there was a Jedi, and you would put your finger on its base to hold it, and then you twist sort of its arm back and let go, and it was spring-loaded, and it had a lightsaber. And each figure had a little wheel in its base. So it had, like, a certain number of clicks that it could move. And so you would move it, physically move it, and you could do it on any surface. We would do it on, like, a table. You could move it, and then if you can knock over one of your opponent's figures, that figure is out. And so, like, some of them had, like, little Nerf-esque projectiles, and so you just sort of had to actually manually aim it and shoot it at other figures. But it was all about, like, getting them in the right position and then using them to physically knock down other people's figures. It was really, really cool idea.
But interesting. I played paper football, so that's basically the same thing.
Yeah.
You put the uprights up.
No, you guys remember those little? You guys remember those little finger skateboards? Let's talk about those for a
minute. Oh, man, those are great. And then you could like Z-bots. Make a little half pipe.
I had some Z-bots.
Sure. Justin, tell us about Hearthstone.
Tell us about
Hearthstone.
Pogs.
Is based in the, if you'll forgive me, World of Warcraft, and
the World of Warcraft.
The World of World of Warcraft. It pits two players against each other. They each have a 30-card deck of their own construction, but as sort of like a guiding principle for how to put your deck together, you play as one of nine different characters. Is that right?
Nine different classes.
All classic classes from World of Warcraft, warlocks and mages and druids and warriors and et cetera, et cetera. But it's a very basic system, and I quantify that only in the regard that I've been able to understand it. There are 30 cards in your deck. You draw a hand of cards, and you have a mana bar that fills up by one crystal with every round. And each card in your hand costs a certain amount of mana to use.
That's one of the best parts of the game for me, is that there's no, unlike most trading card games, you don't have resource cards that you play. Mm-hmm. And then based on those resource cards, you can spend that energy to play your other cards. So Magic the Gathering has, terrain
swamp.
Cards? Yeah, it's a swamp. You have swamp energy, you play it, and then you can tap that energy to play one of your other cards based on its cost. In Hearthstone, you just get that energy and it refills every turn, so it behooves you to burn through your mana as much as you possibly can and use it as efficiently as you can every single turn. You don't have to think about, like, oh, I gotta save some mana for next round. It's just there.
It's sort of frustrating when you play those games and it's like, oh, I have to waste this entire turn putting mana out.
Right.
Whereas here, it's literally removed from the equation. You know exactly how much mana you have, and you're gonna just have to spend it based on the cards you have. I think that aspect alone is very inviting. And the other aspect I really like is that it's not complex math, but all the math is taken care of it for you in the game. So essentially, like, depending on how many hit points a card has, or how much attack it's gonna do, you see that physically represented on the card, because it's a game, it's not a physical card. And you don't have to, like, this guy's going to have one left.
You have to put bottle caps on your...
Right.
Yeah.
this is the future.
It really is. There really is just... I mean, there's a lot more complexity and depth than the surface level, but the surface level is like 90% of the game. It's all about attack and health and, like, putting down enough minions that have enough attack to, like, take out the other minions without their health dropping to zero. Like, it really is just those two numbers.
Yeah.
It's not like... You have to keep in mind, like, oh, is this unit flying? Is my attack even going to hit that? Like, it. There are definitely variables, but for the most part, it's that.
Yeah, I don't think there's a way to, like, really explain how to play the game in oral form, at least. But the tutorial in the game, which is sort of par for the course with Blizzard games, is
excellent.
So good. It's so, like, good at easing you into it.
That is probably the chief reason that I continued playing this game, is because... It is laid out the first... You have five or so
games that are laid out for you against pre-made competitors, and it introduces one facet of the game in each round that you play. Mm-hmm. So it's very slowly adding, layering things on, so you're completely able to grok
it. Can I ask you guys a question?
Yeah.
Please, yeah.
I'm worried that this happened to me and just me. So there's actually like 10 of these, right? And on the last one, before you even play it, they're like, hey, this is, you're going to lose this one. Sorry, you know, blame the game designers. It's just too hard. And then I played it going in thinking like, you know, I'm going to have fun. I'm going to go out guns blazing, but I'm going to lose. And then I won. So then when it ended, I was ready to, I assumed I am a natural born Hearthstone player. It would be a shame for me to waste these skills and not play this game every day for the rest of my life. And then about 10 minutes later, when I was going to brag to you guys about it, I caught myself and I realized that
that's what
they wanted.
You've been goofed.
I've been goofed.
I was hoping that you would go directly to play someone online and just get absolutely decimated.
No, what I did is I turned it off and I assumed I was great, and then I played Griffin and I accidentally beat him somehow. We were using basic decks, to be fair.
Sure.
And then I tried a practice round and I got destroyed.
Yeah.
It's interesting because as simple as the game actually literally is, there are so many levels where a more experienced player could demolish you. On the one hand, just their strategy might be better. They might have a better plan. They might have constructed a more solid deck with cards that work better together. Or they may just have cards that you don't.
They do. They definitely have cards.
They definitely have cards you don't. And that can feel a little unfair, but I have beat decks.
Yeah.
With a solidly constructed basic deck that doesn't have a lot of frills.
I have beat decks with
a lot of crazy cards.
If you get good draws and you play them smart, like you'll win. It really isn't about how many cards you have, but there is, like, if you go straight down the line statistically, like if you look at every card that costs 2 mana, the best cards that cost 2 mana are almost always the ones that you have to find in packs or craft yourself. So have we talked about that? The two ways that you can get cards?
No, we have not.
There are two ways that you can get cards. You can craft them using a resource called Arcane Dust, which basically, depending on how rare the card is, it costs a certain amount. And then you can disenchant the cards that you currently have, i.e. destroy them, and get Arcane Dust in return that you can spend on making other cards. It's really not one-to-one. You get like a fourth of the value of the card whenever you destroy it. So to make like one common card, you have to destroy 4 to get enough resources, I think. My math might actually be off on that. But it's not like a great value in that sense.
But if you have a bunch of cards you don't like, toss them.
Toss them, yeah. Or if you buy an expert deck and you get a super rare card for a class that you don't play, burn it and get a bunch of dust.
I would not suggest doing that, by the way, because there are daily quests that you can do to gain gold for yourself,
right?
And gold you can use to buy
decks.
You know, new decks
or and not these daily sorry quests, not buy decks, buy packs of
packs
cards,
of cards, right?
Which
and these daily
5.
Quests a lot of times are, you know, tell you to play a certain class, so
right,
you may get into a new class that you like better.
Sure. There's also the arena, which is a specific play mode that is really a nice equalizer because you don't use the decks you've constructed when you play the arena. It puts you through this deck-making gauntlet where it provides you with 3 random classes. You have to pick one. And then basically 30 times in a row, it presents you with 3 cards, usually of the same mana value, and then you pick one. And then move on to the next set of 3 cards, pick one of those, and you keep doing that until you have a deck that you have made. So, and it doesn't pull from the cards that you've collected. It's everything. And then after that, you keep fighting.
But for the arena, you need to, like, pay
you
to
do
play.
Have to pay. It's 150 gold to play the arena.
Right.
It's 100 gold to buy a pack of cards. But the arena is almost always a better option, because even if you... So once you lose 3 games in the arena, you're out. the more games you can win before you lose three, the better rewards you'll get after you finish the arena. So no matter what, you get an expert pack of cards.
Okay,
you get a pack
of cards.
Like, no matter what. So it's almost always the right thing to do. You can also get, like, more than one pack of cards. You can get a bunch of gold. You can get a bunch of arcane dust. If you win, I think my highest streak is, like, 5 or 6 wins before I got 3 losses. You can go up to, like, 12. And if you can get 12, you're just going to get, like, so much shit. But it's almost always a better idea to do that. And it's really exciting, and it doesn't make you feel like, oh, that person just won because they've spent more money on cards.
Yeah, right. I like that, too. And I like the fact that, like, even when you lose, you, like, understand why you lost. It's not like someone pulled out this insane, like, strategy that doesn't make any sense to you. It's like...
Right.
It's very clear, like the way they present what a card does, even if you don't have it, you just hover over it and you see all the stats on that card. But it's just like very clean cut. It feels like a bare bones, like very focused collectible card game that just does not have a lot of fat on it at all. And on top of that, the other thing that really draws me to it is the like Blizzard, which is standard Blizzard presentation aspects to it. Where they, like, make every car that you play, there'll be, like, a funny audio clip or, like, some special effects that fly out. You can, like, there's a catapult on one of the maps, like, on the board, and you could actually put rocks into the catapult, pull it back, and fire the catapult. It doesn't do anything. It
doesn't do anything. It's just cool.
I did not know that.
Blizzard, you're crazy.
The arena,
so much money.
The arena is also great because it can... You might draft a card that you don't have... And then you finish your arena run and you end up with like a bunch of dust and you say like, well, I'm going to just go get that card because it was so awesome and I want to start including it in my other decks. Like with every game you play, you learn something about a card or like a synergy that two cards have, because a lot of cards have like special effects that will happen as soon as you play them on the field. And some effects work like really, really well in tandem. And so, like, you start figuring that stuff out, and then you sort of naturally gain resources through playing, and then you spend those resources on fine-tuning your decks until you have something that you really, really are proud of.
Yeah. I like the fact that it's so short, too. Like,
every match is, like...
10 minutes?
5, 10 minutes, yeah.
Like, that's it. It's like, nice. It will never go over that. And that just...
Well, I mean,
like,
I've had games that go on for...
It can turn into a slog.
Yeah.
You can get to a point a lot of times where two players are playing sort of a middle game type deck, and there are decks like that that are the two different sorts of kinds of cards there are minions and powers. Minions are, they stay on the board and
protect
fight for you
eventually,
and
yeah.
protect you
yeah.
and fight for you, and powers augment them or attack directly or charge you up. There are minions that have an ability called Taunt, which means that they have to be attacked first before your opponent can attack you or other minions that you may have out. And you can have a strategy where, you know, you're playing a lot of Taunt cards, which can, you know, sort of let you turtle and avoid damage. And if, a lot of times it'll get down to just draw each player just taking turns drawing one card, hopefully... that they get the thing they need.
I had a game that ended with basically I was playing a deck that I thought was so genius, and it was all about just like putting a bunch of minions on the board, just flooding the board with minions and including enough spells that can clear out my opponent's side of the board. And I played a game against somebody who had that exact same deck to a T.
We
made it to the final round, and we had both burned through all of our cards, just like flooding the board and then erasing the other person's side of the board. And we did that back and forth and back and forth until we were both out of cards and still almost at full health. And then it was just like 20 minutes of drawing, like hoping that we were going to get the one card that was going to clean the other person's clock.
What happens if you run out of cards? I haven't actually gotten to that point.
I mean, you can run out of cards, and then you don't have any. I was talking about like running out of cards in our hand, not in our draw pile.
Okay.
Yeah. So it is. It's a really rewarding. It's a deeply, deeply strategic game. Mostly around those kinds of synergies that I talked about. And every class has their own class specific cards that all play off each other. So like hunters, for instance, have a lot of cards that augment. Other minions that have the beast type so like wolves and bears and stuff. So they mainly want to build a deck based around those things.
Yeah,
and then
they'll like spawn a lot of other side minions.
Right, and so beasts can have their own synergies within themselves. Like it really is like there's so much complexity.
Yeah. But on top of that, don't let that scare you away, because that's what put me off to it. When I heard, you know, crazy deep strategy, I thought that's a time commitment, and also I'm just not into card games like that. They're too confusing. It's so simple because of how the health and, I guess, attack powers are weighted that you feel like you're constantly learning easily. Like, yeah. It never feels overwhelming, and it's kind of as difficult as you want it to be. I'm sure you could obviously take competitive play. Like, we have Phil on staff who is a freak at this game, but at the same time, the match that Griffin and I had this morning felt, you know, just as fun, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh my god, when this hits iPad, I'm gonna lose my mind.
That's exactly
it's gonna
what
be
I was thinking,
insane,
guys.
Man. I mean, you're gonna have to be online for the matches, I think.
Yeah,
sure.
That's fine. I'm sure you could maybe do practice offline. I would play the hell out of it on iPad.
It's going to be, I mean, oh my gosh.
I just like the feel, even the feel of like picking a card from your deck and like dropping it on the field is a satisfying.
Yeah.
Like it's so well done. Like
every time. There's also a lot of augmentation of, like if you're doing a big play, like you're doing a big amount of damage to a boss, like the graphics and sound that accompany that feel very impactful.
Feel like you're just fucking Shadrachin' that, yeah. Dude. Like, people cheer for you if you deal, like, 10 damage in a single turn. Like, people just lose their minds. Like, yeah, they know what they're doing, man. They know how to make a game, like, feel like something.
Yeah, I was, like, shocked how well they've got the tabletop feel down. Mm-hmm. Because I thought, you know, they haven't made tabletop games before. But I guess when you really pull back from it and you think about Diablo and StarCraft, I mean, these are games that are clearly inspired by tabletop games that existed before them, and in some capacity kind of have that feel to them already.
Sure.
Like when I play Diablo, it doesn't feel like I'm actually, you know, wandering around these places. It feels like I'm looking at the most beautiful versions of game boards with
characters.
Yeah,
you're
moving
a figure around.
Yeah. I had never thought about Diablo like that. In a weird way, this game is making me appreciate a lot of their other games even more, in terms of like how well they know exactly what they're creating.
Yeah. Good job, Blizzard.
Man, it's like they know what they're doing.
Well, I do have one more question. Were you able to chat when you were playing with a friend?
Yeah.
But you can't chat. I don't think you can chat with strangers. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, God, why would you want to?
I wouldn't want to. I'm just clarifying.
Like, every time, like, somebody, like, I spend a really long time. There are a lot of decks that build on synergies that develop a single minion into, like, a killing machine as fast as you possibly can. Like, there are minions that become stronger when your other minions die. So you might, like, put him on the board and then put five, like, super cheap minions on the board and then kill them all off so that one guy becomes, like, mega strong. And then the other player plays a card that, like, turns him into a sheep, and you're like, you motherfucker. It's so easy to take someone's shit apart.
Yeah.
And it's so frustrating every time. I don't think I could restrain myself.
You should play my Polymorph and Murloc deck. That's all it is.
Oh, God.
It's all Polymorph
awesome.
And Murlocs.
I'm disowning you as a friend.
I love that I played this for like 30 minutes. I'm already like thinking
building
of horrible
decks.
Things to do.
That's awesome.
That says a lot.
Yeah, it's really good. Everyone should check it out.
Tell us about something exciting that's going on. Griffin, you're getting a house, right?
I'm buying a house, dude. It fucking sucks. This
you're
process
so grown up.
Sucks.
Oh, I have questions about this. So
okay, go ahead.
You're buying a house. Mm-hmm. You're pretty close. It seems like you're getting close to like locking this thing down.
What do you, the house?
Yeah.
Is that the
or
question?
Just like, or just my
no.
life? Like,
no,
you're
a,
getting pretty close to just like doing nothing
no, about
else
the house.
For the rest
there's
of your
a follow up question.
Okay.
So the question is like, as you're looking at this house, like, do you spend a night in the house? To see if there's like
to see if
weird,
it's haunted,
right? To see if it's well haunted or just has like raccoons in the basement. Like I feel like a lot of stuff happens at night that you wouldn't know of.
They did disclose that there was a serial drowner that lived in this house.
Like what kind of drowning? Like in a tub or like ocean?
Just like water, man.
Any water.
Any water.
Any liquid? Honey?
Get a big enough bucket. This guy can just, like, do his thing. Yeah, no, it's going to be very haunted. And that is, like, sort of the one thing that an inspector won't pick up on. We've had probably four inspectors in this place already, which sucks.
Different, like, electricians.
Yeah, like general inspector, an engineer, a plumber. Sure.
What about a Ghostbuster?
No Ghostbusters. Do you know why, Plant? Because nobody's actually doing that yet.
Someone's got to get in on that.
I'm sure there are people who are Ghostbusting if you pay them.
Guaranteed.
There's probably somebody who will inspect some esoteric, like, idea of your house and charge you $400.
I Ching. Or what is it? With the furniture.
Yes, how's the I Ching of your house? How is the Tao of your house?
Close enough.
Is your house's chakras aligned? Because you're fucking, like, your beams and pillars in your garage certainly fucking aren't.
Yeah, it seems a little overwhelming, to be honest. And you sort of have to take their word for it, because it's not like you know if the, like, J-pipe is out of whack.
No, I actually do know all about that J-pipe.
Oh, really?
I mean? Yeah. I mean, I was in college, wasn't I? Pasadena on the left-hand side, am I right? Smoking weed.
Oh.
Is it scary? Are you scared, Griffin?
Yeah, it's fucking scary.
Because you think you're going to fuck up.
Because you think if you fuck this up, your life is fucking ruined.
Yeah, it's ruined.
We had a plumber, and we didn't know if we wanted to, like, pay $400 to have a specific plumbing inspection, but we were like, sure, let's just do it. And he did it, and he was like, oh, yeah, here's an issue. It cost you $18,000 to fix. Like, fuck me, dog. Like, Jesus. If we hadn't paid you to do that, like, that's $18,000.
It's like getting an accountant. You save money by spending money.
I guess that's what they mean when they say you got to spend it to make it, except you have to spend
backwards.
It to not put yourself in the fucking poorhouse for the rest of your life. Like, it is a horrifying process. It is very scary.
Yeah. Is there, like, a lemon law with houses where it's like after 30 days you can sort of be like, nope, not for me.
What?
And then you burn it to the ground? What's you give it back to the seller? Like, I would like money back now?
Not feeling it.
Not really digging this one. Lot of ghosts.
Does that not work out?
You did not disclose about the serial drowner.
Because you could just keep jumping from house to house and basically getting, like, free rent that way.
Also, I don't think that's a real law with cars. Yeah. I think
the lemon law. Google it.
I mean, you also don't understand how the home buying process works if you think it's, like, no money down. Free rent.
Well,
keep on house hopping, buddy.
Well, I've watched a lot of House Hunters and a lot of that flipping show where they flip things.
World's
Strongest
Best Flipper.
Barrel
and,
flipper.
And so I'm pretty well versed in the situation.
Do you think you'll ever buy a house, the two of you?
Yeah.
Not in New York, though, right? Because it's like, I can't fucking imagine going through all this in a place where,
you buy a condo in New York?
Well, you'd either buy an apartment. You wouldn't buy a house, certainly, unless you moved out to, like, way upstate where Brian is, or in Queens or something. You could buy an apartment. Apartments are a little... I think there's less variables in apartments, first for space, and second, like,
the building. It's not practical for, like, me. Like, I can't buy an apartment in New York.
Right, but I'm saying the process is, you don't have to worry about, like, the heating necessarily, because the building...
But then maintenance fees, which are, like, bonkers.
Crazy. It's not a standalone thing. Man, it's just, like... It makes sense. Like, I can understand how financially this process makes sense. It's just, like, getting into it is, like, I just wish it was more like Hearthstone, you know?
Yeah. They need, like, a tutorial.
Need a tutorial. I'll tell you that much. There's no fucking tutorial. If somebody makes a video game that's, like, an interactive process of buying a house, I would play
that
it.
That has to exist.
They should make a video game where it's, like, not only buying a house, but, like, you have a job, and you take a shower, and you go to the bathroom, and you have, like, a meter that judges, like, your hunger level.
Sounds like a Nintendo game or Sims, maybe. Is that it?
Wait, has that been done? What?
You click the Sims, in Sims, you click a fucking house on a map, and it's like, it's 24,000 simoleons.
Yeah,
it's like,
there
okay,
you go. It's
bye.
Easy.
Done.
That's not what it's like.
Exactly how it is. You don't have to worry about option fees. You don't have to worry about earnest money. Oh, God.
Earnest?
You're like a baby.
Does he go to jail?
No, he gets scared stupid.
Totally done with that.
I'm done with you professionally.
Let's talk about the next game. On our list, which actually came out at the very, very tail end of January.
It apparently was also on Early Access, but it launched for full in earnest. Please don't make another earnest joke at the end of January.
Yes. But so the game is Loadout. It's free on PC. It's a free-to-play shooter. And I think at first glance, people will think, oh, it's Team Fortress, but not made by Valve. It's similar in the sense that it's an action game, and it has cartoony Pixar-y graphics. But it plays a bit more like Quake, has a camera. It's a third-person game like Gears of War. And I was pretty pleasantly surprised by it. I went in with basically zero expectations and came away having a lot of fun. It's a pretty well-polished action game.
I played a lot more of it last night. I had no expectations that it would hook me.
It's pretty fun. It's we should talk about the free-to-play stuff up front. It's really weird. So it has two different forms of currency, as all free-to-play games ever have to. And I did, Russ, you and I did an overview of this game.
We did.
We were like,
we
I can't believe how much free shit it gives you. And then one of our readers like commented like, what did you guys spend money? I don't understand why you have all this free shit. Like, nah, man, you just start with all this free shit. Apparently because I have like the Polygon Steam account on my computer, I wasn't even using it. It started me off with like a ton of free money.
Now, in this case, obviously, it's a free-to-play game, so we figure, like, oh, it doesn't matter, obviously, if we have a free account.
But I wasn't even using that account. I was using my personal account, so they, like, snuck me some funds.
Yeah, like, so apparently I guess Steam Press accounts are, like, granted. Is it just, did we figure out, is it just a crap load of gold?
Yeah, I think it was just the gold. I think. I don't know. See, now I don't fucking know anything.
Yeah, I'm a bit worried about it, too.
Yeah.
Let's, for argument's sake, say it's just the gold, because I have read a lot of people have been having a lot of fun with the game, even without paying any money.
Okay.
But essentially, you've got these two currencies. You've got the gold, which is just for visual customizations of your character, costume, etc.
It's also gun slots and loadout slots, which are you know, that's sort of the one area that is a little shady, because that is kind of a mechanically important part. Of the game is having like a lot of different options available.
Sure, but you do have like a free loadout slot. Like,
yeah, and I think you have three gun slots that you can like craft your guns and put them in.
So there's that, and then there's Bloots. Is that right? Bloots?
Yeah, that's the blue currency. The other one.
So the blue currency is used to unlock weapon customizations, and this is really where I got the most fun out of the game. Is the weapon customization system is super in-depth. You can basically change every aspect of a gun, changing its, like, the ammo that it shoots, what sort of accuracy it does, scopes, what type of gun it is, from, like, a beam weapon to, like, a launcher to, like, a machine gun. You can change it to a sniper. There's, like, a ton of customization options. And there's a really cool testing system where even if you don't have the currency to buy a gun, you can just test it out and see if it's something you want to work towards. I mean, I said in the overview episode, it's something that I wish a game like Borderlands had. It's just super in-depth and allows for a lot of fun on that front that I really wasn't expecting. I mean, most of these games have very strict gun rules. Griffin, you sort of
I made a terrible gun. Yeah, you can make a shitty gun. Like, it's sort of like they threw balance to the wind and said, like, go ahead and get out there and find the best way to do it, which is kind of a clever idea, because not every gun is right for every person. Like, I'm shit with sniper rifles. I can't, like, if I unlock a sniper rifle in a Call of Duty game, I'm like, oh, fucking great.
Skip.
Like, never gonna use that.
Yeah.
I'm more of like a submachine gun guy, because that's sort of the range that I like to be with other players, and I'm terrible at aiming, so I have to be close anyways.
Yeah. Fast firing.
Yeah, so like it sort of gives you freedom to make that and do that and go however you want, but it is also possible to make a gun that like shoots a scattered blast of healing barbs like 3 inches from you that is just fucking useless.
Yeah, it does absolutely nothing.
But that's kind of fun. That's kind of great that like you can experiment and fuck up that bad.
There's an option to test each of the weapons too before you actually purchase all of them.
Yeah.
And often I found that
I literally
just
talked about this.
And I'm just saying that I didn't do it.
Okay.
Like I would go into a game and spend the money and find that I had made a terrible weapon and realize.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying is I literally just talked about that.
Listen,
try to stay tapped in, Chris Plant.
There are a ton of carrots in this game because there's a tech tree that as you use different like weapon attachments and weapon types, they level up, and then you can upgrade them or unlock new attachments that you can purchase and put on your guns.
Yeah.
So there is like a lot of variation. You can also pick up other people's guns when you kill them and sort of see what it is that they're slinging.
Yeah,
that's
if you keep getting crushed by a guy and hopefully he dies eventually, you can just pick up his gun and mess around with it.
Or like if you're bad at killing people, you can make a healing beam gun and then use that on your teammates and you still get like experience and points and stuff for that. And it genuinely is helpful because nobody's doing it right now and almost all of the game types are objective based.
Yeah, so. To the point where no one really knows what you're doing when you start firing at them, so they'll run away from you.
Right.
It also heals you.
And it heals you. Yeah, there's a lot of benefits to it.
There's some really terrific locomotion in the game, too, because you have dodge rolls that you can do, and you can, like, chain those with a dash to, like, cover, like, huge gaps in the map. Like, it's really, really, really fast-paced. There's so much jump dodging going on, which is such a, like, crazy old-school concept that, like, basically everybody is using right now.
Yeah, it feels very quakey.
Are you enjoying that part of it? Because once I got into, like, matches with better players, I found it kind of frustrating shooting anyone. It felt like I had to learn the trick to how to play it right. Kind of like, do you remember snaking in Mario Kart?
Oh, yeah. People, snaking in Snake.
Yeah. Oh, God, thank you. But where people figure out a different way of moving than the game intended for you to use, and it's only fun for the people who, like, master it.
Yeah, so that was the case in Gears, where, like, people would just go from cover to cover. It's still the case. I can't play Gears of War multiplayer because all the game is like, oh, you move a lot faster when you're moving into cover, so people just like zoom from cover to cover. And I didn't notice that as much in Loadout because you obviously aren't using cover mechanics. It felt a lot easier to stay on target with people. But I do know what you're saying. It can be really frustrating.
But yeah, it's a good game. It's a... I think it dishes out the blutes, which is really the I think the more
that's
important
all
currency,
you care about.
Because
I mean, everything else is just visual.
It's what you spend on upgrading your tech tree and on unlocking attachments for your weapons. I really do think it's the more important of the two. I've heard a lot of reports that gold is really hard to come by, so you have to actually spend real money if you want to like buy outfits for your characters, and the price of those outfits is like pretty exorbitant.
Yeah,
gold is more valuable for buying bonuses. So you can buy like XP bonuses or loot bonuses, or I guess multipliers. And that's why you'd actually want it. Otherwise, it has very little impact on the game.
But to me, the core of the game is like this idea of experimenting with making your own guns. And I really do think that it dishes out enough currency for you to do that without having to drop any cash on it.
And you can make a decent weapon early on. The reality is like some of the fanciest weapons that you can make, the craziest ones, they lose a lot of their oomph. Like there is a give and take to almost every attachment that you put on the gun. So you can get like a weapon for, you can get a rocket launcher that fires, I think, 5 or 6 rounds, but it makes each round almost meaningless.
Yeah.
And then you want to find out, well, why would I want something like that? And then you could make that weapon have lobbed rockets, which are more like grenades, and you could give each of those grenades flak, which, you know, explodes in a radius, and you want 6 because it doesn't matter if it's little damage so long as it's covering like half the map. It's like figuring that stuff out is what I enjoyed.
Well, I enjoyed the violence and horrible gore of this game.
God, I don't like that.
I really like it. I don't know why I like it, but I find it really... So there's like the level of violence is insane, where you can literally, like, you'll shoot a guy in the arm and a chunk of his arm will get removed and you'll see the bone underneath the arm. But because it's... Sorry, I almost dropped my mic there. But because it's...
It's so hot and bothered.
I was really getting worked up.
It's really excited, you sick fuck.
But because it's cartoony, it's, like, very, like, silly and, like, over the... It doesn't look realistic. I mean, you can literally shoot a guy's head and his skull will be gone and it's just a brain with eyes.
It has almost a claymation look.
Yeah, it looks...
That makes
it looks
feel
like
kind of safe. The thing that bothers me is, like... Flipping the bird after you die.
That's
like,
a little crass.
Just kind of like, shallowy MTV humor.
It does have this, like, very juvenile sense of humor, and some of which is, like, really lame. Like, oh, you can do the dance from Gangnam Style. Yay. Like, that's not cool.
What happened to the joy in your heart?
I'm sorry.
You used to love Gangnam Style.
I did. Those were the days.
I feel bad making fun of this game too much, though, because at the very first thing it asks you to do in the game is name your weapon, because when people kill you, they can steal your weapon, and then they'll see whatever you named it. And I think I named them the Fart Cooker and the Fart Kisser, and, like, that's... That's immediately, I was like, I have the perfect name for this weapon.
You won,
and then
you
I was like,
loadout.
Stupid game, showing the bird, like, I'm better than this. No, I'm not.
You're not much better than it.
You're not?
I named my first gun Tim Gun, which I was really proud of.
That's nice.
Yeah, I actually like it. And given the fact that it's free, I don't think there's a reason you shouldn't give it a shot.
Guys, a lot of games came out in January, but should we talk about some of the big news?
The best news of the month. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say anything on this list is
the best
good news.
It is actually a lot of pretty crummy news. But yeah, I thought we could take a look back, see what happened in the month, and you can think back to how you felt at home about when those moments happened. For example, remember when Nintendo almost went out of business because they're doing so poorly?
That's an exaggeration.
It is. I'm blowing out of proportion, but they're really having a tough time.
They still got Fungibles.
They have good games coming out.
They ain't got no debt, and that's good.
Really, the issue is that no one seems to want to play their gaming console, the Wii U.
We're talking about this like we're on Fox and Friends. Have you heard of this Wii U?
It's almost like I do that on a regular basis. What do you think is the issue? Is it just a matter of like they just missed with this new console and there's no coming back from it? Do they have a chance?
You know, I would have ruled them out after the GameCube. I would have ruled them out, you know, many times before. I don't think that they're going to... I hope they're not building their business on the hope of having another sort of insane
Wii U
mainstream
Wii
success like the
yeah,
Wii.
Yeah, like the Wii.
That was not just quality product. That was a specific time period and a specific, you know, lightning striking type.
Well, the DS too.
Yeah, right. If we're talking about insane cultural, like wide adoption and like in unreproducible success, you talk about the DS, which is it's the best selling piece of gaming hardware of all time, right?
Yeah.
Like dedicated gaming hardware, not including like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it wasn't like. It wasn't driven, I mean, obviously it had the dual screens, but the success of it had nothing to do with the fact that it had dual screens. It was just like...
Everybody made fucking games for that thing.
Everyone was doing it.
It had, I think of any Nintendo system, the best mix of first and third party releases that came at like a fucking relentless clip. Like, there was constantly something you needed to play.
Yeah.
That was out on DS that would like just come out of nowhere. Like, oh, Scribblenauts, what's up? Like... Scribblenauts is out now. You probably didn't know about it. And
let's pick games that were fun to play, like Castlevania.
Every Castlevania game on there was really
oh my
great.
God, amazing!
Yeah. And then Scribblenauts came out and just fucking changed the game.
And that's really the issue. I agree. Like they shouldn't be in the mindset that they're ever gonna hit that like 1-2 punch of Wii DS. But the question is, like, I was talking about this the other day. Do they just like say, okay, consoles, we're just never gonna catch up on the console side,
but
and
we know
focus
what
on
they're
handheld.
Thinking. We know that they are in the mindset that they can replicate that. Like that, that's their long term goal. Their long term goal is to make the health platform, and that was Wii Fit, which was the biggest. I think their proudest success for the Wii.
Sure.
I used the word unreproducible earlier. I don't think that's true. Obviously, their strategy is going to continue to be going forward, making sort of hardware designed for their own dedicated software, like their big hitter franchises, which you can say what you will about Nintendo, but those games are almost always fucking phenomenal. They're almost always like really, really great. And so they know they have this opportunity still if they have the right hardware to support the right software. I think we use failures, and I'm not saying anything new or fucking revolutionary here. It was a huge messaging problem when it came out. It is, when you look at like the big buzzwords that PS4 and Xbox One bandy about being like entertainment hubs for the living room and interconnected experiences for players across the globe. Like Wii U,
you can draw pictures for people and they can see them.
It's not really great for either of those.
I think the problem is Nintendo is the world's greatest parlor trick maker and toy maker. Like, and that's what the Wii was. The Wii didn't really quite do what they advertised it to you, right? Like, when we first saw it, it's like, wow, this is going to change the world. Motion controls, Wii Fit, like, we're engaged.
Okay, it did. I can't.
Yeah, sorry,
okay,
you listen, need to stop.
It did change the world. Inarguably changed the world.
But it didn't.
It absolutely changed
but it wasn't,
the landscape of video
But I would
games.
Agree. And part
sure,
of that
but
is
it,
a
it
magic
didn't
trick.
Do what they thought it would. It wasn't actual motion controls. It was a trick.
Boom blocks.
Oh my gosh. My point is they make these really great toys. That's what they do really, really well. They don't make, like, Wii Fit isn't actually a platform that's going to change the way that we do health. And even the Wii didn't really change the way we play video games as much as I think anyone thought it would initially.
Are you kidding me?
You're crazy.
Do you not remember how fucking everybody was playing catch up after
the
Wii?
Yeah, everybody did it, but we don't play motion games like that
That's
anymore.
True. It's no longer, I mean, it has normalized back to like where it was
before. I'm not
saying
it didn't happen. I'm saying that it wasn't the revolution that everybody thought it was. And yeah, we have Kinect. And the biggest thing that we use Kinect for is to turn on our TVs.
Yeah, it was about for 5 years or so that was, I mean, it basically dominated everything, and now it's, again, it's normalized back to where things were. And
yeah,
I'm not
understating, like, what they did. What they did with the Wii was absolutely incredible. I think what I find concerning is if health is really what they, like, are banking on, if that's
their
big thing.
I don't think it is it?
That's what they've explicitly said is their long-term goal, is to build this giant health platform, whatever that is. I think that's a mistake because they don't make that sort of accurate technology. They don't make things that I think change, that literally change the way we do things. I think they make really impressive kind of demos or things that get very close or create the illusion of it.
Yeah, but that's fine. It doesn't need to be super accurate, especially for the health set.
I think for health it probably does. And that's why people have gone cold with the latest Wii U exercise things. I mean, you saw a review.
I think it's more the fact that like everyone bought a Wii Fit and now they realize, oh, it's sitting in the closet and I haven't touched
it
in 3 years.
Listen, we got a lot.
Okay, there's a lot of news. There's a lot.
iOS controllers released is another thing that is written here that I don't know what it refers to. But like, let's get into that.
Hey, so you know how before there were iOS controllers, but they were like made for specific games, and that sort of sucked.
Yeah.
Now there are iOS controllers that theoretically could work with all games that support iOS controllers.
They like, still kind of suck.
Okay, real quick, I just want to go around. Is that how anybody on this call, yes or no, just I want to hear yes or no, wants to play video games?
With a controller?
I'll say this. And it's
video games?
It was a yes or no. On their fucking phone.
Oh, you didn't say that.
Dullard.
It's not one-to-one for me because I have an HTC One. I did buy a little controller for it, a Bluetooth controller for it, so that I could play games on it. I connect my Bluetooth controller into my HTC One and I snap that into the controller and it's fucking great. It's fucking super good.
Justin,
I don't know if it's the same for iPhone
iOS,
because it's, you know, it's
a little different.
It's
here's
different
the deal.
Games, yeah.
You got, Justin, I think you have a very short-sighted view of this. I agree with you. It's silly to like be on the subway, have your iPhone, whip out a controller and carefully prop your iPhone up on your lap and play a game with the controller. What's not silly is
Apple TV.
Right. The moment that Apple wakes up is like, hey, we should put every fucking game we've ever made on Apple TV. Suddenly you have a controller and thousands of games for $1. Tens of thousands, millions. I don't know how many there are.
Or but, even ostensibly a second screen experience using your phone and Apple TV.
It's hard for me to think that way when Apple has shown time and time and again that they have neither the inclination nor the ability to even acknowledge that humans play video games.
I don't think that's the case. Look at how much of their app store is dedicated to gaming. They know how much money it's driving.
Apple,
like, against their will. You know, every time
I agree that it
a game
them
goes
by
on
surprise.
An app store, fucking Steve Jobs' ghost comes down to Earth and walks it angrily, like, how did you let this goofy thing on here?
That sounds
can't there
like
be something
Steve
else
Jobs.
For listening to podcasts?
That's good character, Justin. We should bring that back.
Apple is like the dad of a child, like, celebrity. Like, he loves collecting all that cash, but he really doesn't give a shit about the kid.
Honestly, I think the second, like, They're going to wake up one day and be like, well, guys, here's our official controller. All our games are on Apple TV. And Microsoft and Sony have to think like, oh, maybe our $10 indies or our $60 AAA games have a little bit of competition on TV.
I mean, if that's the way the world worked, like, yeah, but if that was the way the world worked, then, like, that's the same line that people have been giving about Nintendo games. Like, you know, so one of these days, Nintendo's going to wise up, and they're going to put all their games on, you know, fill in the blank
no,
here.
No, stop, stop, stop. That's a totally different... we're comparing two different things entirely. Nintendo has built a business around selling $60 games. They can't start selling dollar games and make as much money.
I'm just saying the logic of, hey, somebody can make a lot of money if they did this, is not always, you know, the end of the conversation. I agree that they could make a lot of money, but sometimes corporations don't want money.
I think the bigger argument is people who play iOS games love the convenience of it, and just the simple task of connecting it to their TV is too much.
Yeah, it might be, but maybe not.
I think it's exciting. I can't wait to see what people do with it. Let's move on.
I want to talk about this next thing because it's interesting.
Yeah.
Titanfall. You remember when everyone freaked out about this Titanfall news?
Well, here's the thing. We're going to talk about this. It's sensitive. Let's not diminish people's like frustration with it. Because the news is Titanfall only has 6v6 multiplayer. And when I first saw that and I saw like, by the way, we're reading off, right? This is the most trafficked news stories from...
No, I just looked
you just
through.
Picked a cross-section. People were like... There was a lot of discussion in our post about this, and there were a lot of people who were fucking furious about it. And my first inclination was, who gives a fuck? Like, that has never really mattered to me very much because, if anything, I would be more excited to have fewer players because it means less of, like, running 6 feet and then getting shot to death.
And it means you can make more of an impact. I mean, that was
At the same time, like, there are definitely, definitely huge, enormous numbers of people who... want those kinds of like large scale warfare experiences. Not only that, if you have 7 friends that are playing Titanfall, you can no longer like party up with all of them. It's way more difficult to like have a game night where you and all your friends get online, start a party, and then just like hop from room to room, which is like a really like important and
I don't.
What is that scenario?
Who are these fucking people
that have 7?
I love to play games on a Friday night, and I also have 7 friends
that are all playing Titanfall. I get what Griffin is saying.
I think you guys are like trying to
Griffin is trying to pull some like Velocity Girl nonsense, or like imagine you and 7 of your friends are riding around at the same time. You're all playing video games together.
I'm just saying, just because it's not the way that we consume games doesn't mean there aren't tons of people who do it that way, because there are.
Sure.
And that is like a really important experience that only became possible. I mean, in terms of consoles,
this is what kills me. Like. So what?
So what? It means they can't do that anymore.
But,
like, that's
No. It doesn't mean they can't do that anymore. It means they can't do that with this game, Titanfall, that isn't built for it.
Right.
That's like saying Spy Party doesn't support 16-on-16 death matches. Like, well, no, of course it doesn't, because it's a game about two people playing against each other.
I think that's not really
like,
great.
It's exactly this.
It is. It's like
the chess metaphor.
It's
that
not
was
a great
about
metaphor. And
exactly.
Here's why. First of all, Spy Party isn't really part of this shooter genre, right? So like it doesn't, the fact that it's 1v1 doesn't really go against any kind of norm that the other entries in the genre has sort of set. Also, when they were originally showing off this game, I think I'm right about this, I hope I'm not talking out of my ass, I think it was 7v7, so like
does that change anything?
Yeah, Russ, it changes it by 2 goddamn players. Like, yeah, it changes something. I
don't
totally
think it changes that much.
And also, like, this is it's something that that people were very, very, very excited about. It's a shooter. So, like, when compared to its contemporaries, 6v6 is pretty fucking low.
Okay.
Like, you can't really say that about Spy Party.
But this is that, like, line of logic is the reason that every AAA game that comes out is so fucking homogenous.
Bloated.
Because you have to have... Right. You have to have the bullet points on the back of the box, right? You have to have 52 players, X number of weapons,
right?
Every sword imaginable. Like, why can't the game just be?
Wouldn't you
what
rather
it is? Like,
the
why
game
can't you make
be,
something different?
Right. Wouldn't you rather the game be as focused and as fun as the dudes who made it want it to be? Like, clearly right. they've done a lot of testing.
They've said it's not a like a netcode issue.
Right.
It is,
because clearly they know how to make a fucking game that's 12-on-12 because they did it for 10 years or whatever long Call
also,
of Duty was going
let's
on.
Let's use Battlefield as the example. I tried to play that with Fresh Chicken and a few other people from we hopped on, and it's little groups of four people. I didn't get to play with them.
Right.
So that's Battlefield, which has, you know, gargantuan number of players. I still didn't get to play with
I would also say I'm turned off from Battlefield, like the large games of Battlefield that are like 32-on-32, because my impact is so marginalized because there's 31 other people. There's on my team, there's 31 other people, and there's 32 on the other team.
Flip side of that, though, on a team of six, if you fuck up, your team's fucked because you are, hold on, let me do
right.
math, 12.5? Hold on, no, I'll get this.
Okay, settle down.
16%.
Wouldn't you rather feel like you're making an impact than not making an impact?
Not if I do a shitty job, Russ.
Don't
I can
do
play
a shitty
Mag.
Job,
I can
Griffin.
Do,
this
I,
Titan
I
can, to fight.
I can play
you're
Mag.
Bring up Mag. Don't.
I can play Mag.
Oh, God.
And
don't
I can just sit in the middle
that's
of the barracks,
about.
Pooping in my hand and making cave art. And our
I'm
team could still win. I'd be like, yay, I did it.
Cola.
I'm the best soldier.
I caught a little shit recently because I said I was happy that The Order announced that they're not going to have a multiplayer mode. And the reason I said I was happy about it, not because there was no multiplayer mode, but because it was focused development. They knew what was going to work for them under the resources they were given, and they're pushing for that rather than tacking shit on. And that's what I feel like this is.
I mean, you never know what a game's development environment is like, though. Like, Tomb Raider, I don't think, suffered because it had a multiplayer component. Like, they could bring in a separate team to do the multiplayer component.
Yeah, but
like
that costs money, and Tomb Raider came in under expectations because they spent part of the money on multiplayer that they
it
might
came in
not
under
have...
expectations, but it made up all of its development funds.
A year and a half.
I'm just saying like,
I trust that developers, especially developers like Respawn, who have been through a lot of bullshit, know what kind of game they want to make, and I trust them more than I trust a back of the box bullet point saying 32 players.
And I have to imagine that either EA or Microsoft was like, come on, guys.
Oh,
well,
I'm
let's
sure.
Let's just try 32.
I'm
let's
sure just... most of them wanted more.
Give me 32 players.
Right. So, frankly, I'm thrilled. I realize a lot of people are pissed off. Guess what? You can play Battlefield. It's still broken.
Like any other game.
Right.
Like,
there's tons of options.
Baffling to me. It's just such a weird, like, this game isn't what I wanted it to
okay,
be.
Okay, but can, that argument does not work for Titanfall because it's such a fucking crazy outlier. It's not like Call of Duty Ghost came out, and if it was only, like, 2v2, then people were like, well, fuck that. I'm going to go play some other military shooter. Titanfall is the fucking heir apparent to the next-gen Xbox One kingdom, and, like, it is a game that has had so much hype behind it. And then that hype, that is the double-edged sort of hype, is that as soon as you run afoul of somebody who's fucking totally jized, then it hits you back style, like, twice as hard.
I think it'll do okay anyway, but that's... Hey, and, you know, sequels. You gotta go have somewhere to go.
Yeah, right.
That was a good conversation, though. It was very engaging. I like.
Oh man, there's nothing that caps off a better conversation than acknowledging
blue,
it's a good
than a blue Cantrell reference.
Oh gosh, I'm gonna talk about the Banner Saga, but I'm kind of a funny choice to talk about it because I don't know a lot about fantasy, which is kind of what this is. But I'm gonna go for it. Banner Saga is a new tactical role-playing game made by some former BioWare developers. I think it's only three or four of them. Griffin,
I think the main development team, unless they've—I don't know. I interviewed them, God, when we were doing Press
it's
Reset. What was that, like a year and a half ago?
Oh, my God. Was that the same game?
Yeah, it was the same game, and it was just three guys all from the Austin BioWare branch. I think it was the Austin BioWare branch. Anyway, they're called Stoic. They're cool dudes. They work out of a goat shack.
A literal goat shack?
Yeah, it was in a farmer's market behind this really great bar in North Austin. And they just found this space that was literally a shack where goats lived. And so they bought it and put computers in it and insulated it. And that's where they developed it.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's absurd. So, I mean, the basics of it are you... You're in this kind of land that looks like a Don Bluth cartoon, kind of that 1980s, I guess maybe even late 70s cartoon style. It's gorgeous, but 2D animated style, kind of looks like a Viking era thing, and there are humans, there are giants, and there are these stone monsters, and we're led to believe that there have been all these wars that have taken place between them. Anywho, the sun has stopped moving in the sky, and trouble is afoot. Man has turned on man, and you are going on a quest to not really get to the bottom of it. I don't want to go too much into the story because I don't want to spoil any of that stuff.
Well, and also, it's the first part of a three-part arc, so I mean, sure. If we got into the story, wouldn't be able to cover many of the bases.
Yeah. But you're also trying to forge an alliance, and trying to like reunite the world, and you got to figure out this sun situation, sort of like what happened with the Teletubbies.
Is a real pain in my keister.
It is.
The whole thing with it not being one
stone monsters.
Well, there is a sun.
Kid?
It's just not moving.
Ugh. No thanks.
Mondays.
There's kind of a sleight of hand here because it is a strategy game, and you lose people. There's permadeath for a number of the people in your group, which I found really intimidating. But you kind of just accept it. The fighting is not the most important part of the game. The most important part is actually the conversations that you have, which play a big impact on the way the game plays out, and also this weird Oregon Trail-like game that happens between fights and cities that you visit.
And it's really slick how well these things all work together. So you mentioned the permadeath. Your character sort of, in layman's terms, has a number of lives that they can lose. But they can lose those in battle, or like you're in a town, the town's about to get ransacked, so you try to get as many people out and as many resources out as you possibly can. And one of your team members in conversation will just be like, what do you want me to do? And you can be like, go get some people and load up the truck. Or you can be like, go hold off those monsters so we have more time to get more resources. And if you do that, that person's fucking dead. Yep, like the permadeath can happen in conversation. It can happen on the trail. It can happen in battle. Like there are consequences to literally everything that you do. And they're really, really well implemented just because of the sheer number of decisions you have to make. It's not like... not that the Walking Dead games do this necessarily poorly, but in Walking Dead games, zombies break into a room, you have to save one or two people, and then whoever you don't save dies. It's more abstract than that. It's, I can sacrifice this person, and then maybe we'll have enough resources to make it to the other town without everybody fucking starving to death. It really is, it feels more real in a way.
Yeah. They hide, like, a lot of, they don't make it clear where there'll be, like, as you said, a moment where you're in a room, and it's, like, pick between these two people. It's very subtle, and you really have to pay attention because, yeah, it is literally you pick the wrong thing, and a kid is dead because he got hit in the face by an axe.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of Dungeons & Dragons at its best, and I'm talking about, like, playing with friends, where you have a really competent dungeon master who is using the gameplay elements to kind of draw you in. It's not really about the fights. It's not really about any one thing. It's about this kind of story that you are telling almost without realizing that you're part of it. And that's what I really liked about it, is that I felt like I was in the hands of somebody who really knew what they were doing. And that even if I lost players, like, I was still going to get through this adventure and enjoy it on the other end.
And that art style, man, you can't fucking
understand.
It's unlike anything else out there. All of the guys who made it showed me how they worked on the animations. It's real people that they got, and then they would do like a death animation where like they would just film somebody sort of collapsing to the ground, and then would do that Bluth style animation over it.
Rotoscope
animation. It's so cool. Like every single thing that happens is really, really, really cool.
Did anybody else have a hard time following it a little bit because they introduced so many characters?
It's overwhelming.
There's different plot lines and factions sort of all going on at the same time, and they really just, there's very little introduction to the world. They just sort of drop you into it, and then you have to sort of figure out the different allegiances and the politics of this world through conversation, which is very fantasy-esque.
It's like The Wire with Vikings.
That's not like a terrible...
Thank you, Justin.
I know you're probably goofing.
No,
but I'm
serious.
Think that's a terrible comparison. It reminded me of like trying to read. It's why I gave up on the Game of Thrones books, just because like I don't know. There's a lot of they're introducing a lot.
It's
of
high.
Stuff
it's high fantasy.
And,
like it is. It is not.
Yeah, you have to be high to like it.
It's not like especially approachable.
It is. It's definitely punishing. You will lose people that you really like. It's sort of like Fire Emblem in that way.
Yeah.
Be careful.
the combat is also really it's funny that we're talking about this in the same episode we talked about Hearthstone, because it basically boils down again to two statistics. You have an armor statistic that can sort of yep. mitigate damage whenever you take it, and then you have a I forget what the other
strength.
It's called strength, right? Which is also your health and the amount of damage that you do. So as your health goes down, you become weaker, which functionally like makes sense. So you have to always, you can target with almost all attacks and abilities, either armor or health. So, you know, if you fight against a really heavily armored guy and you just try and like storm him and go for the health, you're not going to do very much damage. So you have to choose which of those two different things to attack. And if you make the wrong choice, then they can, you know, pay it back to you in kind. It's really simple, but with a lot of under the surface complexity.
Yeah.
That makes it a lot easier for me to get into than most tactical role-playing games, because you play a Disgaea game, and man, oh, it is just like, I get it, like I get the appeal, but there's just so many fucking moving pieces and statistics going on there that it is the opposite of approachable.
Yeah, it is a weird strategy though, because like the idea of like, oh, your health is really low, so you'll do very little damage, is sort of a different mindset than most games, but I like it. I think it's a good system.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good game, Banner Saga. Well done, all.
GG. Justin, got any emails you want to read for us?
Yeah, we had a few of you chime in on what your favorite games of the year have been. You can write to us at besties@polygon.com.
Can we call these resties?
He's the resties.
These are the resties. Trace says Banner Saga is his favorite.
I already did that so far. Next. I know. Pay attention, Trace. God damn it.
I'm just chiming in. He said he's old enough to still favor turn-based strategy and RPG games from my youth, as well as have a fondness for the Oregon Trail, plus the art, music, and ambiance are perfect for the setting.
Agree.
He also likes Hearthstone.
Yes. Also into that.
Phil's favorite is Ollie Ollie.
Oh, is this Phil Kohler?
Fucking Ollie Ollie.
Phil, no, it's not Phil Kohler.
I loved Ollie Ollie.
How did we forget about Ollie Ollie?
I thought about it, but I don't think I've played it, and I know Griffin's played it. I don't know if the other two have played it.
It's fucking sick.
I have not played Ollie Ollie.
It is a 2D downhill skateboarding game that requires you to basically build the longest and sickest combos that you possibly can. It's on Vita, which is like the perfect place for it. It was originally, I think, going to be a mobile game, or maybe it was also going to be a mobile game, and the developer killed that. Roll7 is the developer. Killed that just because like it feels so good on the Vita. It's such a good place
really
for
good
it.
Controls. Very
really
satisfying.
Slick controls. Really like slick presentation. It's got a Spelunky-ass daily challenge mode. It's got hella leaderboards. It is a nice little game.
Yeah, it's groovy.
Ollie Ollie, we also heard from Mark Bayer, who says Threes.
Oh, no. That came out in February. Oh, you can't say Threes.
We'll talk about that.
Maybe we'll talk about Threes later, because I'm obsessed.
Threes is amazing.
It's really good. Yeah. Grant says his favorite is Hoplite.
Oh, what up? I loved Hoplite. Justin, you didn't like that game.
It didn't really click with
me. You're wrong.
Cool, man.
I don't like the tile.
Did you give it a lot of time? Was that an issue?
No, he played one level and was like, F. 2D graphics, don't care.
Like, F, 2D graphics,
I got the pixels. It was the pixels.
It's good, man. It is a roguelike with progression elements that carries over even if you die, which is like,
yeah,
that's what you got to get. You got to have those. But it also has like a sort of chess-like system of movement. I mean, it's on a hex, so obviously it's not chess-like in that sense, but you have to constantly evaluate what the best move is, which gives it a lot more depth and approachability than most roguelikes, which I think are more boiled down to like, well, I'm going to take this hit.
Right.
But is it going to be enough to kill me, and can I find a way to heal? It is almost entirely based around what can I possibly do in this turn that is not going to get me hit.
Yeah, it was actually created as part of a game jam, and the effort of the game jam was to make a roguelike that didn't rely on the concept of roguelikes where two enemies, you sort of like run into an enemy a bunch of times, and like that's how combat works.
Yeah.
So this was his solution, which involves a lot of like sliding around enemies as attacks, and it's just really, really well designed, and it's great because it's turn based, so it's like really good for the iPhone. Like I play it on the subway and stuff like that. It's highly recommended.
It's $1.99. Check it out. I've been having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah. Anything else?
Yeah, Steven Swift says Euro Truck Simulator 2.
I have not played that.
Matthew says that his favorite is Broken Age Act 1, which I loved. That was great.
I still haven't played through all of it, unfortunately.
I have a question for you guys. Yep. I haven't started this game yet, right?
I have not either.
Would it be wrong for me to just wait till the whole game is available? Because I'm kind of, I don't want to start this and then be really bummed.
I wish I could have.
Okay, yeah? I'm going to do that then.
Okay.
I said in my review, I mean, on the one hand, it's fun to look forward to something. On the other hand, I feel like we're doing a disservice to stories by telling them this far apart. You know,
it's a two-parter, right?
Yeah, it's a two-parter. We use the TV comparison for games a lot, and I think that if you're keeping a super regular schedule, it's maybe applicable. But like, for instance, I just played the second act of
Wolf Among Us,
and
what is that, 3 months?
It's 4 months. 4 months. I mean, I went back and played the first episode for reasons that are too boring to dictate here. But if you hadn't, like, that is really hard to keep up story momentum. Yeah. I mean, that's tough.
Yeah. Do we know when the second part of Broken Age is coming out?
I don't think they've dated it, no.
Could be anytime.
But it's really cool. I mean, it's really hard
to complain about, like, the development decisions that they made. I mean, it's not difficult because fucking, like, a lot of people who kickstarted that game, I think, were grousing about the decisions that they made. But, I mean, obviously it turned out a good product. So, like, it was the right decision, I think.
Yeah. Talking about that TV thing that Justin just mentioned, I'm just playing Alan Wake for the first time because nobody recommended it. Everybody was like,
Shut your mouth. Talk to Chris Grant.
Yeah, I know.
I recommended it nonstop, jerk.
That game is great, and the episodic structure is great, and I'm really jazzed about Quantum Break now. But what I realized is I don't so much care about getting the game, you know, every couple months. I just appreciate that the game is broken up into chunks of, like, complete story, right? Like, because they know that they have to hit these moments within a certain amount of time, I feel like they're writing better story. So I'm jazzed about that, and, like, I'll probably play Wolf Among Us when it's all out, but I just have no intention of waiting that long.
I don't know. I actually fall into the camp, as Justin referenced it in passing. I like being excited about what's coming next. Like, Rachel and I played the first episode of the second season of Walking Dead, and, like, I am now, like, really, really, really looking forward to the second episode, which is I like having that in front of me, and I think that Telltale probably likes that I like having that in front of me, and am definitely going to buy it.
You are the guy who bought a Wii U because there weren't any games out for it, but you were ready to be on the hype once a good disc come out. Sure. So.
That's true, and, like, some of my favorite games for last year were on the Wii U, so you know what?
That's true, good
point. Worked for this guy.
As games come out in February, make sure you email us besties@polygon.com and let us know which ones and why, so we can make sure to say hello to you. Kyle Allen, by the way, also suggested the Banner Saga was the best game so far this year. So I think that's pretty much going to do it for us. Thank you so much for hanging in there with us. And seriously, no kidding, thanks for demanding that we continue to make this program. You can review this show on iTunes. You can tweet about it with a link to our iTunes page with the besties hashtag. Just hashtag the besties would be great. And help us to spread the word about it so we can make the show grow.
Yay.
Next episode will be in late February. So you're not actually going to have to wait that long.
Right.
A few weeks.
Bonus.
And shoot an email. I think you just said it. besties@polygon.com. It doesn't just have to be.
And now who's fucking repeating email address?
I'm just saying, like, if you have questions, I think those might be fun to field on the show.
Oh, yeah. Discussion not just topics. Favorite games, but also,
Yeah, since we've decided to just meander for 2 hours, we're going to have to kill a lot of time.
We had a very structured rundown. That's what
they said.
They said,
we want you to tiptoe through the tulips and waste a couple hours of our life.
Mission accomplished.
Hopefully the dishes are all washed now and you can finally stop listening.
If it took you 2 hours to wash those dishes, goddamn.
There's some grease.
licking hey, them clean.
One last thing. Wednesdays at 12 p.m. Eastern, we have a new show called Polygon Live. Justin McElroy is going to be on it this week.
I forgot I was going to do that.
But
that is appending him not being able to come up with a good excuse to get out of it.
Seems likely.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Polygon Live, if you aren't watching it, every Wednesday at noon.
Eastern.
We do a,
and also Eastern, available on
a,
iTunes.
A live video show.
Also available. Yeah, it's a video podcast on iTunes. They have those too.
Podcast.
We are just, we're getting it covered, guys.
We are just making a lot of stuff. And that's going to do it for us this week on The Besties. Make sure you join us again next month for The Besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
Besties!